Rice Arena to Little Caesars Arena. We've got the sports opinions that matter to you. From the Driven Collision Studios, we make friends by accident. On The Game, 7:30 a.m.
The views and positions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the views and positions of The Game 7:30 a.m. Some may find the content of this program controversial or offensive.
It's time to play the game.
And maybe right. Put on your big boy pants and buckle up. This isn't a safe space for weak takes or whining. You can say that this sports radio show is offensive-minded. Call the show at 517-300-4263. Text or call us to The Game, 7:30 a.m. Message The Game, 7:30 a.m. on Facebook.
Guess who's back? Back again.
Beanie's back.
Tell a friend.
Now, here's your host and professional hellraiser, Beanie Howell.
Now, this looks like a job for me, so everybody just follow me, because we need a little controversy, because it feels so empty without me. I said, this looks like a job for me, so everybody just follow me, because we need a little controversy, because it feels so empty without me.
Welcome aboard. It's Offensive Minded here on a Thursday night football edition of the program. So glad to have you with us. I'm Beanie, and this is Lansing's one and only sports radio station, The Game, 7:30 a.m. Before we even get started today, I want to remind you to come out and see me, Brock Palmbush, and I believe Dr. J doing a special guest appearance as well as we broadcast Nachos and Kneecaps, the Lansing area's very own Detroit Lions tailgate show, live from Reno's North on Old 27 between the north side of Lansing and DeWitt, starting at 6 p.m. tonight, going up to 7:10, 7:15 or so. We'd love to see you come out for get some swag and, of course, get your fix of good food and drink as well as some gritty Detroit Lions talk. And we'll take you up to pregame, network pregame coverage of Lions at Packers on both Classic Rock 94.9 MMQ and right here on The Game, 7:30 a.m. Would love to see you tonight. Reno's North, 6 to 7:10 or so. Come see us, all right? Dr. J is here. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good as well. Big game.
Yeah.
Big game.
Looking forward to it.
Fourth game of the season, and we're already in a titanic clash for NFC North supremacy. How are you feeling about it as a Lions fan?
I'm feeling confident, actually, which is weird to say as a Lions fan. I'm never confident. But I don't know if it's overconfidence or what. I'm feeling good.
Well, let's call a spade a spade. There's nothing wrong with feeling confident. It's the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Every team goes into every game thinking they can win or should win.
Mm-hmm.
Because the difference from the best team in the league to the worst team in the league is minuscule.
Right.
Any given Sunday. In this case, any given Thursday night, streaming exclusively on Amazon Prime. But also, look, recent results dictate that you should be extremely confident.
Mm-hmm.
The Lions have won 3 in a row over Green Bay. Now, the first one to start the streak, I think, was the end of the 21 season where the Packers had everything clinched. And they did play starters for like the first quarter and a half, and then Jordan Love took over.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, it counts. The bigger stat to me is the Lions are 4-4 in their last 8 trips to Lambeau.
Oh, okay.
A chance to go to 5-4 in tonight. That's massive. And I hope people, especially Lions fans, appreciate the gravity of that stat. You've split the last 8 games played in Lambeau Field. Before this stretch, you didn't win there for a generation. They went more than 20 years without stealing one in Green Bay.
Yeah.
That is an enormous deal. You should feel supremely confident. They went there last year, not even a year ago, in the supposedly, like, you know, kryptonite environment of Lambeau and a cold evening with the playoffs on the line. And we all know what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
A big moment for this franchise in this particular era and regime. So you should have supreme confidence. Now, speaking of confidence, I think the fact that the line has moved in the Lions' favor is telling. The line opened at the Lions getting a point and a half. Excuse me, giving a point and a half.
Okay.
When's the last time the Lions were favored on the road in Lambeau?
Right.
I honestly don't know. I don't know if that's happened in my lifetime. But they are giving now 2 or 2.5, depending on the book. That tells me that Vegas knows that more Lions will play tonight who are injured than Packers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the big storyline going into the game. Both teams are pretty banged up, especially for just 3 games in. The big question marks for the Lions was Taylor Decker and David Montgomery specifically, who are both listed as questionable. But if you listen to Dan Campbell and his media availability this week, he sounded optimistic. I think the line moving half a point to a point towards the Lions tells you that those guys are both going to play. That's just how I read it. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But Vegas stakes their livelihood on this kind of stuff. And what I'm saying is they have access to incredibly inside information. So I would bet both of those guys play. As for everyone else in the Lions injury report, I don't know. And I don't know that anyone matters as much as those two guys anyway. But here's who's ruled out. Let's set this the table with the injuries first. The Lions have already ruled out Vitae, Matt Nelson, the guard, and Jason Kabinda, the fullback, who's I don't think has played yet this season. Questionable, another guard, Jonah Jackson, Kirby Joseph, and Emmanuel Mosley, who the ACL is rehabbed, but he suffered a setback with a hamstring issue. And as we're about to talk about with the Packers, that is a nagging thing that you can't rush. You just got to wait. I doubt Mosley plays. But again, the big ones are Decker and Montgomery, both listed as questionable. But from everything I'm seeing, they're expected to go tonight. Packers, ton of injuries. Here's who they've already ruled out yesterday. Yesterday, these guys were ruled out. David Bakhtiari, who hasn't even been injured yet. It's just the lingering. It's going to be the way his career goes now after that massive ACL problem like 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Just brutal. He's out. Elgton Jenkins sprained an MCL a couple of weeks ago. He's out. So already the entire left side of the Packers offensive line is out for this game. And then, what's his name? I forget his first name. Campbell. Devondre Campbell. Good job. The Packers, formerly all-pro inside linebacker. He's out. Ankle problem. Here's who's questionable for the Packers tonight. All-pro corner Jair Alexander.
Oh.
Who missed last week's game. That's a big development because the Packers are not specifically deep there right now. Zach Tom, another starter on the offensive line, the right tackle. And then the two big ones, Aaron Jones, who's been dealing with a hamstring since the end of the first game against the Bears, and Christian Watson, who hasn't played yet this season because of a hamstring.
Mm-hmm.
Again, hamstrings, one of the worst injuries you can get of a non-season-ending variety because there's just no rushing it. And there's only one treatment that's effective, and that's taking time off and resting it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so by the way, both Jones and Watson expected to play tonight. The Packers, some players in media availability basically let the cat out of the bag earlier this week. I would expect both of them to go too. And that's a big deal because Aaron Jones is kind of like the straw that stirs the drink for their offense now. And Christian Watson is the guy who takes the lid off of a defense with a, you know, straight away like 4-3 speed. That's a big deal. So that's where we are injury-wise. Now here's what I want to get to about confidence, Dr. J. Over the summer, and I'm trying not to generalize or paint with too broad of a brush, but my 35,000-foot view of this as not part of the Lions culture, but just media here, and as a cheesehead, was that the Lions fan base in general thinks that this is their time now by virtue of Rodgers exiting Green Bay and them going to Jordan Love.
Mm-hmm.
this fan base as a whole felt supremely confident that Jordan Love was not just going to be not good, but was going to be an abject disaster at quarterback for the Packers. Now, that could still happen. We don't know. He's played three games. That means nothing. Spit in the ocean. But I'll tell you, from my view of things, and I just know because it's my team, there's a misnomer going in the Lions fan base that the Packers are only going with Love because Aaron Rodgers dumped them.
No.
Guys, it's the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. The Packers dumped Aaron Rodgers because they invested the future in this guy. When you draft a guy in the first round, he doesn't sit for 5 years. Most times he doesn't sit at all, but he sat for three full seasons. Well, you don't draft a guy in the first round not to play. Mm-hmm. And I also believe, remember last year they gave the last season, the Packers re-upped Rodgers to a three-year massive deal. Massive. That's costing them dearly on the cap right now. I think when Rodgers got hurt last year, but played through it, he took no reps with the ones in practice for basically the last month and a half. Jordan Love got all of those reps, and I think the Packers saw him with the ones in practice, and that's what made up their mind, that they were ready to move. They saw enough development. Another offseason, we'll be good to go. It's time to separate now. That's what happened. Aaron Rodgers didn't come out of that cave for a few days and say, you know what, I don't want to be a Packer anymore. Actually, he came out of the cave and he called the Packers and they're like, yeah, we already moved on. So the Jets are the only team we can cut a deal with. You want to play? It's going to be with the Jets. Anyway, here's what I'm getting at. If I were to guess, if I took like a scientific poll of the Lions fan base over the summer and asked on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not at all and 10 being petrified, how scared are you that the Packers are going to do it again with another good quarterback? How scared are you that Jordan Love is going to be good? I think the cumulative response would have been somewhere between 1 and 2. And I think that number would be drastically different if we polled them now. So let's do a small version of that. Dr. J.
Yes.
Scale of 1 to 10 over the summer before camp started. 1 being not at all, 10 being absolutely petrified. Mm-hmm. How worried were you that Jordan Love was going to be good?
I was at a 2 because I had seen him play against Kansas City and it was terrible.
His first career start in the 2021 season when Rodgers, quote unquote, inoculation didn't hold up to COVID.
Yeah, so I was at a 2 based on that.
Okay. Now 3 games in. What's that number now?
Yeah, I'm up to a 7. He's looked really good. Like, calm. His throws are good. I don't know. He seems like he's a lot better than anybody expected him to be.
So on that scale of 1 to 10, you basically went from
0.0
to... I don't know why the Packers haven't made this a thing yet.
They should.
For this. Shouldn't they?
Well, but they have that little heart thing whenever they get a touchdown, which I think is adorable.
Yeah, Romeo Doubs caught a touchdown last week and he gets up and makes the heart symbol with his hands.
It's really cute.
I mean, it's cute when it works. They call me Jordan. They call me Doubs. Jordan. I've got the cure you're thinking of. Jordan. Yeah, that's enough of that.
That's pretty bad.
Okay. Well, your response illustrates what I am perceiving about the fan base. But here's the thing. And I'm telling you, as a Packer guy, or really one of the worst monikers the fan base goes like, Packer backer. I hate
Packer
that.
Packer backer. Ooh.
I hate that. Address me by my actual title, which is NFL owner.
Ah, yes.
As a co-owner of the Green Bay Packers.
Stop it.
Well, I am. I am. I think I'm more in tune with this team than any of you. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you a couple of things from... I think I've developed a reputation in my years here on radio here that I call them like I see them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's for better or for worse. And I am remarkably blunt, I think. And I don't let business relationships change my opinion on things. I've had obviously, you know, Michigan fans hate me for what I say about them. Fine. But a good chunk of MSU hates me, too, for what I say about them. Mm-hmm. I think I've developed and cultivated a reputation for calling it straight. Here's what you need to know about the Packers. I hear people, and not just people in the Lions fan base or Detroit media, starting to wring their hands over Jordan Love. I hear them worried about the Packers' defense, which is the biggest joke to me ever. And Lions fans should appreciate why. The guy in charge of the defense is the guy who was in charge of your defense when you went 0-16, Joe Barry, mm-hmm. Rod Marinelli's son-in-law. You know, the guy who Rob Parker suicided his Detroit media career over when he asked Rod Marinelli in a press conference after a loss, hey, do you wish your daughter had married a better defensive coach?
That's amazing.
Got him fired. Real jerk move.
What a question.
Rod Marinelli is a freaking veteran. He fought for this country. Have a little respect.
So good.
But the point is, Joe Barry is terrible. Terrible. The Packers have 9 first-round picks on their defense. They're not all starting and they're not all healthy. But 9. Guys, there's only 11 positions on the field. 9 of them are first-round picks, and they cannot stop a wide-zone run to save their freaking lives. It's maddening. And it hasn't changed. Has not changed. They have an all-pro corner who may or may not play tonight in Jair Alexander. He's really good. He can shut down half the field. Rashawn Gary, probably one of the best pass rushers in the league right now. Coming off an ACL injury, absolute monster. And if you have more than 2 guys out on the O-line tonight, he's probably going to have a really big night at the Lions' expense. Fine. Okay. I'm just telling you, this defense is trash. The safeties are terrible. Darnell Savage is the best safety. This is another one of the first-round picks who they were about ready to cut bait with last year until they made the organizational decision to move on from Rodgers. And this is key here, and this is what no one around here notices. But this is not an organization that is trying to win this year.
Nope.
This is a let's bleed out the cap situation from Rodgers, which is about $40-plus million. Let's get right cap-wise, and we'll come back after Jordan Love has had 1 year of seasoning as a starting quarterback. Then we'll start to try to compete. Because what team who has had such issues on defense would let better safeties walk and keep Darnell Savage, who they were ready to cut last year, and not bring anyone else in to help? There are so many instances of this. You can look around the Packers roster, and they are blatant tells they are not trying to compete this year. Is it happening? Yes, I guess, but it's because it's the NFC North, like the AL Central. Somebody's got to win it. Look around the Packers roster. Maybe the most telling one, if you want to focus on Jordan Love, fine. How about this? Don't you think an NFL franchise that was serious about trying to win would, in the first year of their new starting quarterback, give him at least 1 veteran wide receiver? The Packers, coming into this year, their wide receiver room had a combined 2,000 receiving yards for their careers. Their top receivers are both in their second year. And then they got 2 rookies playing regularly. And then probably the favorite target who's not a receiver is a rookie tight end. Does that sound like a team that's trying to help its starting quarterback in his first year to immediately contend? I feel like it's obvious. No. This is not a serious thing. It might wind up being a playoff run kind of year just by virtue of maybe Love being better than some people expected and the NFC North being worse than some people expected. But what I'm saying is, I get it. You know, Green Bay has owned the division basically since 92. I understand that. And the Lions are in a new phase here where you're not necessarily used to contending, and you're certainly not used to being the favorite. But what I'm saying is, accept it. There's a reason Vegas is putting the money on you tonight. There's a reason. There's a reason you've won 3 in a row in this thing. There's a reason you've won 4 of the last 8 there. And there's a reason you're going to win tonight, too, is what I'm getting at. They're a better team, top to bottom, than the Packers. Maybe the Packers have a better roster overall. Fine. But it ain't about that. It's about how all the pieces come together on the field. I just think it's obvious to me the Lions are the better team. Injuries, you can't overlook. That can change things. But the Packers are beat up too. Entire left side of the offensive line is out. The big takeaway I hope Lions fans have is that this is not your traditional boogeyman. They're not trying to contend this year, despite what they'll tell you. They can't come out and say we're rebuilding. They just can't. The fan base in Green Bay wouldn't accept that. They're too spoiled. But I am telling you that's what's going on. Because putting out a first-year starting quarterback without a single veteran receiving option, if you're trying to win, is malpractice. But there it is, guys. They're not trying to. It could still happen, you know, be ahead of schedule. Think of like the Pittsburgh Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger's first year. He started as a rookie quarterback. They went 15-1. No one expected that. They were kind of thrust into success before they were ready. That's why they went out flaming spectacularly in the playoffs. And if the Packers get to the postseason, that's what's going to happen with them too. I'll tell you, from my perspective, Love is better than I thought he would be, but I also don't think we should be talking about, oh, well, they did it again. They followed this formula and they've done it again. It's way too early to say that. It was too early to say it after the first week when he carved up the Bears. I think,
Bears.
I think everyone knows now that is not exactly a good measuring stick.
Oh,
right?
The poor Bears.
Week two, he didn't look particularly great at Atlanta and they lost. Mm-hmm. And then last week, I get it, he led an 18-point comeback in the fourth quarter. That's like only the second time that's ever happened in the Packers' 100-plus years of history. That's significant. He already has the same number of fourth quarter comeback wins as Aaron Rodgers did. That's significant. Mm-hmm. But I mean, guys, it's you got to take a holistic approach. Look, he's basically barely over 50% completions. That's not good. You know what I've noticed about him? When he's just slinging it, he's accurate. Mm-hmm. But on the short stuff, like the check down drop off stuff, he is not consistent at all. It's like what it is he doesn't have the touchdown yet. Not touchdown. He doesn't have the touch space down yet. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The short stuff, he's not great at. He airmails a lot of those or puts it behind guys. And sometimes they'll still catch it, but it ruins a big play because they have to readjust and stop their route to catch it. He's not an all-pro quarterback. And I think this fan base, I'm talking about the Lions, or some of you are chicken littling because you've seen what's happened the last 30 years. That takes time. He's not going to come in right away and look like that. It might still happen, I guess. I play the odds, and I believe in regression to the mean. So I think you've caught lightning in a bottle two times in a row. I don't think it's going to happen a third time. Doesn't mean he can't be good. And by the way, I think as a Packer fan, I'm happy that the organization has taken the approach of, hey, you know what? Let's try a new strategy where we don't need the quarterback to be on God mode all the time to have a chance to win. That's the most exciting thing to me about what they're doing. Their scheme is way harder to defend now. They use the middle third of the field, which Rodgers refused to do. That has made the offense more diverse and harder to defend. It just has. So it's not the same Packers offense that you're used to seeing under Rodgers. Not at all. It's very different. This is LaFleur is actually running his offense now, which is exciting for me because I get to see if this guy is any good as a coach. Still not sold. But anyway, look, there's my take on it. I know it's a big game and I know a lot of the fan base is kind of worried about what's going to happen tonight, but I'm telling you, I bet you your team is going in there thinking they're the favorites. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, they are.
Right.
They're laying 2.5 on the road in Lambeau. When's the last time you can remember that happened with Detroit?
Yeah.
So there's a reason for that. And I just think a lot of people, particularly in the Detroit media, have already anointed Jordan Love as established, you know, going to be great. And maybe already there. It's way too early. And while what he did last week, orchestrating, overcoming a 17-0 deficit in the fourth quarter alone, okay. And it was against a top 20 defense, or excuse me, a top 10 defense. The Saints have allowed 20 points or less basically for like an entire season now. They're a really good defense. and he put up 18 in one quarter. Great. I'm thrilled, honestly. Very exciting. But I also saw the first three quarters where he missed a few guys, and then guys dropped a lot of them. Jaden Reed had like three drops. It was rough. And that's another interesting storyline I want to get to about this game. But why don't we leave this segment here, and I put it to the people. Your concernometer about Jordan Love. Where were you in the summer as a Lions fan? Did you think this guy was going to be any good? Scale of 0 to 10 or 1 to 10, whatever. The low end being not at all concerned, and then 10 now being like Chicken Little. Sky is falling. The Packers have done it again. How does that compare your grade on that from the summer to now and your general takes for tonight's game? Lions at Packers coming up tonight. Here are all the ways to weigh in. 517-300-4263. That's the phone number. You can use the free game 730 AM app. Click chat in the main menu to send over free text to us. We'll read it on air. You can email us, beanie at wvfnam.com. You can use Facebook as well. Send us a message or comment there. Just search Facebook for the game 730 AM. This Offensive Minded with me, Beanie, here on the game 7:30 a.m., and we're back after these.
There's only one station in Lansing that you've depended on for sports for over 30 years. Some call us by our government-given name of WVFN East Lansing. You can call us by the name the people of Lansing know us by, and that name is The Game. 7:30 a.m. Start your weekday morning with the Dean of Sports, Tim Stout. Middays with Mike Greenberg. Offensive Minded with Beanie Howell. And The Huge Show with Bill Simon. Simonson, we're a force to be reckoned with. We're Lansing's only sports station. The game, 7:30 a.m.
The Lions travel to Green Bay looking for their fifth win there in the last nine seasons. Will Detroit keep up the trend of turning the Packers' home turf into Ford Field West? We're breaking it down on Nachos and Kneecaps, the Lansing area's local Detroit Lions tailgate show presented by Momentum Health Center in Mason.
Hey there, this is Brock Palmbush. Join me and Beanie this coming Thursday night for a special Nachos and Kneecap from Reno's North.
From 6 to 7 p.m. Come for great food and drinks, swag, prize giveaways, and gritty Lions talks. Nachos and Kneecaps brought to you by Momentum Health Center in Mason on Classic Rock 94.9 MMQ in the game 7:30 a.m.
Fall Foodies is here. Each week, we'll bring you exciting ideas for what to eat and where to get it. Plus, give you the chance to save a few bucks when you seize the deal. This week, it's Taco Week. Visit this station's website to get half-off gift certificates to Smokin' Pig Barbecue, just east of the Lansing Mall. Smokin' Pig Barbecue for the best pulled pork tacos in town and more. Plus, they're now serving beer and wine. Taco Week with Fall Foodies and Smokin' Pig Barbecue, just east of the Lansing Mall.
The new iPhone 15 Pro with titanium is here. Switch to my plan from Verizon at your local store today, and you'll get the amazing new iPhone 15 Pro on us with unlimited ultimate when you trade in any iPhone, any model, any condition. Guaranteed. Yep, even the old phone in your pocket right now. It's your Verizon. $999.99, 128 gigabyte only. Device payment purchase or full retail purchase with new smartphone line on unlimited ultimate plan required. Less $1,000 trade-in or promo credit applied over 36 months. Promo credit ends if eligibility requirements are no longer met. 0% APR.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. But not with ZipRecruiter. Its powerful technology actively finds and invites qualified candidates to apply to your job. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you the needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Cashback is not available on gas in New Jersey and Wisconsin.
Hey, good morning. You're heading to the airport, right?
Yep, thanks for checking. I like the car. How long have you been a rideshare driver?
About 3 years now, but I really enjoy it.
Isn't it hard to make money these days with the price of gas being so high?
Not for me. I use Upside, the free app that gives you cash back for every gallon of gas you buy.
Wait a minute. Are you saying you actually get real money back when you get gas with the Upside app?
Yep, I get real cash back every time I get gas.
Does that actually add up to anything?
I'll make around $200 to $300.
Wow, that's serious extra cash. I'm downloading the Upside app now.
Download Download the free Upside app now to earn real cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code GEAR for an extra 25 cents a gallon bonus on your first tank. You can cash out anytime right to your bank account, PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code GEAR for a 25 cents a gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code GEAR.
Sports fans unite.
Let's go!
This is the one place you can call home for all things sports. We're the game, 7:30 a.m.
Offensive-minded. I'm Beanie. This is the game, 7:30 a.m. All right, to reset the topic here, counting down to Lions at Packers tonight. As a Lions fan, where was your fearometer that Jordan Love was going to be good over the summer on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, before the season started, before camp started? And where is it now through three games? Because I'm getting a sense from this fan base you're worried Green Bay has done it for a third straight time. And I get the generational trauma you have as a Lions fan, but I'm a Packers guy, and I don't think it's that time yet. I think that's extremely premature. You tell me, you know all the ways to weigh in. But Dr. J.
Yes.
You know, I just got back from New York City.
I know. How was it?
You know, you've been there before, right?
I have, yeah.
There wasn't as much like parking lot style traffic as I thought there would be, and I only saw two total rats.
Only two?
Just two.
Okay.
Yeah. Unless you count Wall Street. Everyone there is a rat. Anyway.
You know, when I was there, I only saw one rat. I was very surprised.
Okay. Maybe it's just media poisoning our mind.
I just wanted to see one carrying a pizza down the street.
So I did not see that either, the pizza rat. But also, I didn't hear one case of, hey, I'm walking here. No,
I did hear a lot of honking when I was there.
Yes. That part is true.
Yeah.
I've never heard so many car horns in my life. But anyway, so, you know, it's unfortunate that I missed one of the biggest developments of our time while I was there in New York City. And I didn't get a chance to talk about it.
I see.
But I'm going to bring it up now because we have an unholy union, a collision of cultures, the likes of which together could be an unstoppable force that this civilization has never seen. And I'm talking, of course, of Swift and Kelce. That's why this is a Taylor Swift song that bumped us back in.
Yeah.
What's the song called?
Ready for it.
Are you ready for it?
I just don't know if our culture is ready for, you know, the clash of NFL with Swifties. That's like got to be a collective billion plus people.
Love it.
Across the world.
I am all about it.
Yeah, I'm trying to have some fun with it. It makes no sense to me. I do not see it. I know opposites sometimes attract. This isn't going to last, though, right? Like, none of them do with her. And that's very bold move of Travis Kelce to basically sign himself up to be the victim of, like, 12 diss tracks here on the next album when they inevitably don't work out. I can't believe it.
You got to commend him for shooting his shot, though. You know how he did it, right? Did you read anything about it?
He had said somewhere publicly he had a crush on her and wanted her to come to a game.
No. So what happened is he went and saw her Eras tour at Arrowhead, and he had made her a friendship bracelet with his number on it, because that's a thing. Like, you make a friendship bracelet to go to the tour, whatever. So he made a friendship bracelet with his number on it and tried to give it to her, but didn't end up giving it to her.
What the hell is a 33-year-old man doing going to a Taylor Swift concert to begin with, unless you have a young child?
He's a Swiftie.
And what is a 33-year-old man doing making friendship bracelets?
He was shooting a shot.
I have never heard of a guy successfully getting laid by making a woman a friendship bracelet.
Travis Kelce.
I'm assuming that, you know, being 6'5" and the visage of a Greek god and incredibly wealthy as a professional football player had something to do with
it. He's a very handsome man.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, to me, he looks like a classic meathead.
Nah, he's hot.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, drop the hot part, his face. You think he's an attractive man?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. He's like masculine.
Yeah, the friendship bracelet is real masculine. Apparently, newsflash, guys, anyone out there listening with a Promethean brow, you have a shot with Dr. J, because she apparently prefers her men looking like Cro-Magnon early humans.
I mean, everybody's got a type, right?
Apparently, you and Taylor Swift both into the Homo erectus. Yeah, I just, in all seriousness, this is going to end terribly.
Or it could be true love.
Have you seen on Twitter, like all of the, in social media in general, all of the Swifties who are now like trying to educate each other on how NFL works, how football works? Like there's diagrams going around. Okay, you have four downs, which really means four tries to go 10 yards. If you don't get it in the first three, you should probably kick the ball to the other team. That's called a punt.
Oh boy.
And they're actually like trying to get into it.
I love that, though. That's a whole new audience for football.
That's cult behavior. They have no interest in that, but just because the cult leader is, you know, bumping uglies with one of the premier players in the league, they're all, like, getting on board. This is bizarre. I don't like it. I don't like it. I honestly, like, I've been thinking about it all week, and every time it's mentioned, obviously, you know, I watched in New York City at an awesome sports bar. I saw the Bears-Chiefs game, and I think they talked more about Taylor Swift than they did the Bears, and I could understand why.
They did, yeah.
There's a lot more to talk about there. But it was already annoying me, and I found myself like, I think I'm rooting against it.
No.
And I really don't care, but I think I'm legitimately rooting against them.
I just want them to be happy.
They have replaced Coach Prime as my most hated media obsession right now.
Oh, no.
And I'm rooting against them like I was him.
No.
Oregon took care of that for me, right? Actually, Deion Sanders should be thanking Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce.
Right.
Because it took that ass-whooping and complete ass-showing by Coach Prime and his big-talking buffs right out of the headline.
You saw what he said after, though. Come at me now, because this is the worst we'll be.
Yeah, you better give
Something
me now.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Whatever. Don't get me back on that. I'm trying. Sorry. Don't distract me.
We want to talk about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce.
I got to tell you, so when I heard about this going on in New York, I wasn't paying as close attention because I was there on business. Mm-hmm. Very high-level deals.
High-level deals.
In boardrooms in New York City.
That's what I heard.
And so I hear everyone talking about Swift and Kelce. And so then I make time to watch the Monday Night Football game, one of them, and it was Eagles at Bucks. And I had forgotten all about it. And then I see a sideline shot while the Eagles defense is on the field. And there's Jason Kelce standing next to DeAndre Swift. And I'm like, these two are banging?
Come on. Okay. You saw that joke on the internet, didn't you?
Well, something to it, and then I made it mine.
I see.
Yeah, I localized that joke.
Localized it and mispronounced Kelce's last name.
What did I say?
You said Kelly. Oh,
I did?
Yeah.
Well, I meant Kelce. You know what I meant.
I know.
Anyway, yeah, I think that would be more interesting if DeAndre Swift and Jason Kelce were getting together.
Power couple.
This Taylor Swift, Jason Kelce, or Travis Kelce, I just don't, none of it makes sense to me. None of it. He's a meathead.
You don't understand women.
Well, does anyone? Count me up with the 800 billion plus men who have ever existed. Mm. But I don't think it works on every. I can't find one level where it works. Even like physically, it can't possibly
work.
Stop. He's like 6'6", 250 pounds of pure muscle. And she's like 5'10", 115 pounds, like in a soaking wet t-shirt.
Yeah.
I just don't see how it can work that way.
It works.
She has to go on IR every time they get intimate.
Oh, boy.
Well, he's like, you know, he's one of the most physical specimens in the world. And she's so dainty. I just don't get it, man. I guess I do care because I'm rooting against it in a weird subconscious way. I don't know why. Am I jealous? Is that what it is?
Are you? Do you want Taylor Swift?
No, I want to be in the Kelce, you know, press
media
luxury box.
Next to Mama Kelce?
How smart is that lady? She has played her cards right. She's got two multimillionaire Hall of Fame bound player sons in the NFL, and her daughter-in-law is about to be, it looks like, a billionaire.
Yeah. And Mama Kelce just seems so sweet.
She seems real.
She seems so nice.
Authentic.
Yeah, she reminds me of my mom.
Well, anyway, I don't know.
I don't know why you're so upset about this.
I'm just rooting against. I don't know, because everyone's talking about it. And the fact that Swifties are starting to invade my Twitter timeline.
Stop trying to gatekeep football. Let the Swifties.
That's not real. That's the thing. It's inauthentic.
What if they get into it and start liking football? They just never considered it before.
The second this ends terribly,
and mark my words,
they will no longer be interested.
You're being sexist.
Okay.
Just because a lot of young women now are discovering football for the first time because of Taylor Swift, that's a good thing.
I don't like it.
It's a good thing.
I don't like it. I admit I'm getting older.
You stop it.
I'm at the point in my life where I'm so miserable, I want other people to be miserable with me.
Well, quit that.
When I see other people genuinely happy, I have to try to ruin it. That's where I am in my life.
You need to calm down and just stop it.
Anyway, that's probably the biggest story from the past week is that.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, what a shame that happened. It was that... The two biggest things that happened while I was gone was, you know, the unholy union of Swifties and NFL with Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift hooking up. And for some reason, Ryan Day cutting a WWF promo on 86-year-old Lou Holtz after the biggest win in a couple of years for Ohio State.
It was amazing.
What the hell?
Ohio against the world. Everybody hates us.
Which is, I hate Detroit versus everybody.
Yeah.
So of course I hate Ohio versus the world.
It's worse.
It's not Ohio versus the world. In college football, Ohio is the world.
Right.
Like some of the best players ever have come out of Ohio.
Right.
And I like how he's painting Ohio State as a victim.
Everybody hates us because they thought we couldn't win, but I love these kids.
Here's the thing. It's weird enough that Ryan Day is going after probably a senile old man.
Yes.
Who probably needs to wear adult diapers and has no idea where he is or who he is anymore. That they wheeled out for some reason to talk about this game. I don't get that. That's weird, too. Like, why is he relevant? But also... why is Ryan Day upset about it? Because it was true. What Lou Holtz said wasn't, like, egregious. He said, and I'm going to try to repeat what he said, minus all the spittle. But basically, he said, you know, Ohio State has had a serious physicality problem. That's why Michigan has owned them the last 2 years.
Yeah.
They can't beat a team who's physical. I'm sorry, but that's accurate. I think Ryan Day just doesn't like it being mentioned because he's sensitive about it. Okay.
Would you like for me to recreate what Ryan Day said?
Okay.
We had one bad quarter in 3 years and you're going to come at us. I love these kids. They were not soft. These kids are my favorite. I love them so much. And it's Ohio against the world. Meh. That was what I heard.
I don't know what to say.
I guess him cutting that promo was better than Harbaugh's promos after Ohio State whooped them one of those years.
I'm bitterly disappointed.
Just crying about the officiating.
Yeah.
Look, I thought Notre Dame was going to pound Ohio State because of the physicality. Because Notre Dame is pretty much like Michigan. They're super physical up front on offense and defense, and they do it old school on offense. But then they have a better quarterback than Michigan, at least in the vertical over-the-top passing game.
Yeah.
But I'm impressed with Ohio State's performance to hang in there and absorb the body blows and then to be able, with a first-year starter at quarterback, win that kind of game on the road. That is a big deal. Yes, I think there is something to Ryan Day's point that the rumors of the Ohio State football's Ohio State football program's demise have been greatly exaggerated.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's true because they just pulled off a win most programs couldn't in that situation. But also, look, everything Lou Holtz said was right.
Yeah.
I don't know why he's getting so upset about it. I knew that was going to be good, though, because did you notice small little details like this? When they cut to that on the field, they're like, here's whoever the reporter is with Ryan Day. And right before she talks, you can hear the Ohio State SID, the media wrangler for Ryan Day, say, just take a deep breath. And then Ryan Day goes, watch this.
Oh, boy.
I was like, oh, this is going to be good. And then there he goes.
It was good.
Full on like macho man.
Yeah.
What Lou Holtz said, I can't believe it. I can't believe what he said.
it was
like macho man.
Whining.
Macho man. Hot cup of coffee. The cream rises to the top. Oh, yeah. That was
wow.
Ryan Day. That was Ryan Day basically recreating a cocaine-infused Macho Man WWF promo from the 80s. That was great. I loved it.
It was something.
Anyway. Well, this is going to be a hard pivot. But I wanted to talk about the Michigan State coaching carousel thing for a minute here. That we have a couple, Dr. J, because Something else that happened while I was out was someone in the Detroit media floated an idea that absolutely took off and exploded. Basically that Michigan State should put Notre Dame head coach Marcus Freeman on their short list because if they really wanted him, they could poach him.
Really?
Because they can triple or even quadruple his salary. So I obviously think that's living in fantasy land. Mm-hmm. If it were even possible, I don't think I would even want that because I don't know how good of a coach that guy is.
Right.
I get it. You know, if you get Notre Dame's head coach, that's a big PR win. But I don't know how good he is yet. He hasn't really had enough time to establish his own program there. And really, like, if I think part of the idea here was Michigan State could get him because his stock is probably the lowest it's ever been at Notre Dame because I don't know if you noticed this, but the last two plays of the game, you know, the biggest two plays of the game, and Marcus Freeman's a defensive coach, they were playing defense with 10 guys.
Oh, boy.
And the lineman who was missing was exactly where Ohio State ran it for the winning touchdown.
No.
And Marcus Freeman owned up to it in the press conference when he's asked about it, and he said, whatever happened, there was some miscommunication, and I didn't want to run our extra lineman on and get a penalty. And that is so stupid. Like, So you'd rather play with one hand behind your back as opposed to taking a penalty that would be worth 6 inches?
Yeah.
Because it was on the goal line?
Come on.
Take the penalty. It's basically an irrelevant penalty.
Yeah.
That was a huge blunder, obviously.
Come on.
And then to explain it away like that, maybe even worse than the mistake in the first place.
Yeah.
So, like, do I want that guy as my head coach? Probably not. But I guess that's part of the madness here. The method to the madness is he might be available because he's that. He's Notre Dame fans are hot about this. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I'll just play make-believe here for a second. The idea is State could get him because they have more to offer money-wise. Okay. The problem with that is that's going off the USA Today's coaching salary database, which has Marcus Freeman's salary listed at $2.5 million. For anyone out there who needs to know this, Marcus Freeman is not making $2.5 million at Notre Dame. Notre Dame is a private institution. It does not have to disclose its employee wages, public contracts, none of that. They don't have to do that. What they disclose is what they want you to know. The truth of it is, and I've talked to Notre Dame insiders who would know, and we're going to hear from one in a few minutes, Pete Sampson, who covers Notre Dame for The Athletic. Marcus Freeman is making something more like $7 million per year.
Mm-hmm.
Not even with the bonus and incentives yet, okay? Can Michigan State outdo that? Probably. But enough to get him to leave one of, if not the best job in college football for still a top 20 job, but this is not a lateral move. This would be a backward move. Plus, I got to believe it's not just about money for some of these guys. I mean, doesn't Marcus Freeman want to win a national championship? Probably way easier to do at Notre Dame for a couple of reasons. One, you're not in the Big Ten, which is getting bigger and tougher all the time. And two, who's closer right now? Who do you think's closer to getting there?
Yep.
And whether you think Notre Dame is still a ways off or not, doesn't matter. We're talking about if the Sun is the national championship, Notre Dame is probably on Venus or Earth. Michigan State is in a different galaxy. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It blew me away.
Well, and we wouldn't want him anyway, I don't think.
Why? Go ahead. I'm interested in this.
He's not what we need.
What does that mean?
We need somebody who's proven who can build a program. Mm, I don't know that he can
yes.
do that.
So I'm with you on that. He's only like halfway through year two of his first head coaching job.
Yeah.
He's done an awesome job as a defensive coordinator at Cincinnati. That's why he got the job there at Notre Dame.
They lost to Marshall.
In his first year. Now, hey, you want to talk about a head coach they should look into? Marshall's head coach, mm-hmm. Charles Huff.
Yeah.
Take a look at him. I would want him before Marcus Freeman. By the way, you could get him.
Yeah.
No problem. State could go in and offer half of what Tucker was getting, and they'd get this guy. Like that.
Yep.
And that might be the play, by the way.
Yeah.
We're worried so much about like the head coach and having enough money to lure a head coach from somewhere. Maybe you go for someone who's younger and will be cheaper and that you can get for $5 or $6 million. And then you use the rest of the money you would have spent, like another $3 or $4 million, on NIL every year.
NIL or coordinators.
Well, they already have the largest assistant coaching salary pool in the Big Ten.
Yeah, so then NIL. Yeah, that would make sense.
Maybe that's the play.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it is or isn't, but that's something to consider. But Marcus Freeman, I think the jury's still out, kind of.
I think that he's not shown enough as a head coach, and the things he has shown aren't good signs.
And to get him, the kind of investment you would have to make would be a massive commitment.
Right.
The kind you just made and by the grace of God and all-time stupidity got out of.
We don't need to do that again.
Right. The odds are the next guy, if you lock him up into a completely undeserved massive contract, isn't going to be dumb enough to self-immolate the way Tucker did. Odds are that won't happen again.
Right.
I think what's happening here, and I see this in a lot of fan bases. This is not just a Michigan State thing. I've seen this happen at U of M when their football job was, when their basketball job was open a couple of years ago. I remember Michigan fans, including like Brock even said, like when they were talking about who do you want, and when they hired Juwan Howard, Brock said, I wish they would have gotten an actual name, a bigger name.
Oh.
When you start thinking that way, you are asking to fail.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Don't worry about that.
They'll make a name for themselves if they're good.
Exactly. Now, I get it. You feel better if it's an established name.
Mm-hmm.
But you're limiting yourself from some of the best candidates when you only go after brand names or household names.
Right.
That's a huge mistake.
Well, how do people become brand names and household names? Is by proving it. You want somebody who can do that.
Like with the... I'm not trying to pile on Brock, but I remember him saying that about the U of M job when they hired Juwan Howard. He said, I want him to get a bigger name. And then he mentioned Billy Donovan.
I don't even know who that is.
Exactly. Also, how has it worked out for Billy Donovan? I mean, come on. Not that Juwan Howard's been great. But anyway. Yeah, don't focus too much on the name part of this. That's getting Marcus Freeman wouldn't be about getting Marcus Freeman. It would be, look, we just poached Notre Dame's coach.
Right.
Okay. That PR lasts until it doesn't work out on the field the first time. And then it's like, so what? This isn't about winning the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest criticism about Michigan State and the way the leadership operates is they're so concerned about the media. You are never going to get rosy coverage. Not here. Never. Never. You have arguably the greatest college basketball coach alive. And he's like the last of a practically extinct species in terms of great college basketball coach who doesn't cheat and is good at what he does and actually kind of a nice person and enjoyable to be around, a good person.
Mm-hmm.
He's the last of his kind. And look at the coverage he gets.
Right.
That's the barometer. If Izzo doesn't get favorable coverage, nobody at Michigan State ever will. Why do we care about that? Whether it's the administration and, you know, people in charge, we can't hire Urban Meyer. Think about what the Detroit media would say. So? It's not going to be any different than what they're going to say anyway.
Right.
And the fan base is the same way. Because they've been poisoned by the media. I just hate that. Chris Klieman's name has come up a lot. The Kansas State head coach. He was asked on Sirius XM yesterday whether he's interested and will be a candidate for the Michigan State head coach job. Here's the sound courtesy Sirius XM.
You've had a few months, maybe even a year, to where people aren't throwing your name around for other college football jobs. That is, that's about to end today, coach, with the Michigan State opening. How excited are you for everyone saying that you're going to be a candidate? I know you're just thrilled.
Yeah, exactly right. I guess I was, my agent told me I was there after the Missouri game, and I'm like, been kind of tough to be there when we were on a plane, but back to Manhattan. But I'll be sticking in Manhattan and I will not be a candidate for that job.
Couple of things. First of all, is it Klieman or Klieman?
Don't know.
Okay.
I've heard Klieman.
Okay. Sorry then. I'll go with Klieman. All right. There's that. Second of all, he said, nope, I won't be a candidate for that job. That means nothing, especially right now. Tucker said the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And then 2 days later, he was on a plane to East Lansing.
Right.
With a bag of money. So that means nothing. Don't put anything in. If you're someone that's like super high on Chris Klieman and he has to be the next guy at Michigan State, don't lose any sleep. That means nothing. We're in September, guys. The actual search hasn't even started yet. That's what he was alluding to. He said, I guess I was on a plane to East Lansing while we were playing Missouri or whatever he said. People on the Kansas State message board were posting, I've heard that Chris Klieman is interviewing East Lansing right now. He couldn't. Tucker was still the coach. Michigan State was interviewing guys before they fired him. You want to talk about a way to give Tucker money in this lawsuit that's coming? That would be it.
Yep, you can't do that.
Interviewing candidates before he's even fired? I don't think State did that.
Not allowed.
Okay, and third of all, I don't want this guy. That doesn't mean I don't think he's a good coach. It's just I'm hesitant to hire guys who have inherited good things.
Yes.
So the reason he got the Kansas State job was he was the head coach at North Dakota State, which is the dynasty of FCS. He won 4 national championships in 6 seasons there. And you're like, wow. And then he got to Kansas State, and they've basically won 8 games a year on average, including they just won the Big 12 last year and a New Year's Six Bowl. So you're like, well, no one, yeah, why don't we want him? Look what he did at North Dakota State. Yeah, he took over for the guy that built that,
mm-hmm.
Craig Bohl, who went to Wyoming, and he inherited it.
Yeah, we need somebody who can build it themselves.
Kansas State, he takes over after Bill Snyder had come out of retirement to rescue the program and got him back to averaging 8 wins a year. And Chris Klieman comes in, and they've averaged 8 wins a year. Now, they won the Big 12 last year and a New Year's Six Bowl. Okay. I'm not saying he's not a good coach. I can't make the next hire here a guy that I'm not sure about when it comes to building programs.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be some evidence. And I don't mean taking over for a legendary coach and continuing the success. I mean, building something up.
Yeah.
Gotta have it.
Agreed.
That's why he's not on my board. Would I freak out and panic if they hired him? No. But I also wouldn't have incredibly high expectations, because I think it'd be the hardest job he ever had.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, again, if you're Chris Klieman, if you're committed to this guy out there, a State fan, you think it has to be him, don't worry about what I say, and certainly don't worry about what he said. How many times have we heard a coach say they're not going to, like Nick Saban, I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. A week later, hi, I'm the Alabama coach.
Right.
So I don't put anything into that. I don't know, man. I'll tell you what, though. The Marcus Freeman thing is silly. Wait till, like, we'll talk about it with Pete Sampson. I know some of the things he's going to say about it. Covers Notre Dame for The Athletic. Buckle up, Buttercup. This is a guy who grew up here, you know, intimately familiar with Michigan State football.
Okay.
And covers Notre Dame now. It's interesting because I'm the opposite. I grew up basically in South Bend, mm-hmm. like 30 minutes away in Southwest Michigan. I'm intimately familiar with how Notre Dame thinks and how their fan base operates. But anyway, I wanted to bring that up. That's the big hot topic about the coaching search, which basically is not even officially off the ground yet. And one more bit of sound before we get out of here. I love this. We're talking about coaches, right? College football coaches.
Mm-hmm.
A dead man walking is Tom Allen at Indiana. He's going to get fired. Like, they're sick of him. It was cute when he had Michael Penix and they were winning, mm-hmm. but they haven't done that since they lost him. And he's really grating. He's very obnoxious and hard to be around. He's one of those. He's grating type. You see how he acts on the side? It drives me nuts. Like, his antics on the sideline. Imagine that being the guy you're paying for and he's a loser. Like, that's not going to work.
Yeah,
right?
No thanks.
Take a listen to this. I love this so much. This sound I'm about to play you gave me goosebumps. So, you know, like, whoever the coach is here has a weekly radio show.
Mm-hmm.
They always have. I think everyone does that. This was at the Tom Allen weekly Indiana football coaches show earlier this week. I think it was last night or the night before. And they do a part where, just like they do here at Reno's East, where people get to come up and ask questions. And you'll notice, you know, the way it works is they're very thoroughly vetted questions that really aren't so much questions as, like, you know, propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the school operating it, the program, essentially, right? It's how it works. You're not going to get critical thinking out of these propaganda shows, right? Just won't. But this was not scripted. This is incredible. This is an Indiana fan and donor who's, like, on a first-name basis with the people in charge at Indiana, comes up there, and this is his quote-unquote question.
I don't like being up here, but my section, all right, is extremely unhappy, and since I'm the biggest yeller in the stadium, okay, screamer, They are unhappy with the play calling, Coach. All right? And I'm going to tell you, to a man, they love you. All right? So my statement is, it's a business. And I, you know, and you understand what I'm saying, okay? Because you're the coach, and we love you, all right? But it's a business. So we wanted to make that statement clear. Thank you.
You hate to see it, but more than that, you love to see it.
Oh, that is awesome. I love a donor, not a billionaire one either, but a guy who's probably given tens of thousands of dollars to Indiana football and athletics over the course of his life, who has been nominated by his section of the yes. season ticket holders in the stadium to go up there and basically tell Tom Allen, hey, listen, we like you as a person, but this is a business. Translation, you're a dead man coaching.
You're gonna be fired.
I freaking love that. I wish that was... That's so real.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that happened at every coach's show.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that happening here? Can you imagine?
Oh, boy.
Oh. And I'm not talking about Tucker either. How about the end of the D'Antonio years? Can you imagine a fan getting up there at Reno's East and saying, Coach, we love you. We love everything you've done for us. And when the time comes... When it's all said and done and they build a statue of you, I'll donate to help build it. But damn it, will you fire one of these freaking bums that are your friends on this staff? Can you imagine if someone did that here?
That would be amazing.
Or like any of Izzo's come up, like, Coach, you are Michigan State personified. You are the best ambassador the school has had since Magic Johnson. You are the best thing for Michigan State. And I love you, and your name will be plastered here and in every building. It's already on the football building, for God's sake. You are Michigan State. But Jesus Christ, can you play a little zone just once in a while? Or when a guy is hot, can you not bench him if he misses one over-the-top screen on defense? Can you please not bench the hot hand when he goes under instead of over a screen just once? Please, Coach. It's a business. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
That sound gave me goosebumps.
Ooh.
Not like that, you freaking pervert. Your mind is still in the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce discussion. Think about that. Like he's not an average Joe, that guy, but he is closer to that than a mega donor. Mm-hmm. And he says, Coach, we love you, but it's a business. And he said, and you know what I mean. You understand what I'm saying.
You know what's about to happen here, but we love you, but you know. You know what's got to happen.
He's saying, listen, the play calling sucks. You're going to get fired, but can you at least call a few better plays?
Yeah.
I love that. I wish that happened more.
Wow.
It's Offensive Minded. I'm Beanie. This is The Game, 7:30 a.m.
The future of joint pain.
WVFU. East Lansing. A Town Square media station. We're the station you've turned to for sports for over 30 years.
The Game, 7:30 a.m.
Range 5-1 up.
From Spartan Stadium to Ford Field, we've got the sports opinions that matter to you. From the Driven Collision Studios, we make friends by accident. On The Game, 7:30 a.m.
Welcome back, Offensive Minded, with me, Beanie, here on The Game, 7:30 a.m. Happy to have on the line with us now Pete Sampson. He's the Notre Dame beat writer for The Athletic. Pete, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure, Pete. So let's dig right in. A story that has, well, it captivated Michigan State's fan base for the better part of the last 48 hours, and I'm sure it's made its way to the Notre Dame fan base. Let's kind of take the temperature on what's basically an idea just floated by a member of the Detroit media that Michigan State could have Marcus Freeman on its short list and could actually have a shot at luring him away from Notre Dame just by virtue of dollars and cents. What do you make of that? Do you think there's any potential to that whatsoever?
No, absolutely not. I read that starters, Marcus Freeman makes a heck of a lot more at Notre Dame than that story would indicate. Notre Dame, being a private school, has always sort of kept its compensation for the head coach somewhat private. So what gets reported in the USA Today database is, I would say, roughly about half of what the head coach is making, maybe less. So that part doesn't make any sense. On top of that, and I say this as somebody who grew up in Michigan following Michigan State football, like Percy Snow and Lorenzo White are like some of my earliest memories. the fact that the Notre Dame head coach would leave for Michigan State is insane. That makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, if you want to do like for like, you can look at Michigan State's last two games against Ohio State and Notre Dame's last two games against Ohio State. Notre Dame is a heck of a lot closer to the mountaintop than Michigan State. I don't know where, like, that's like a Notre Dame fan when they were saying, like, Bob Stoops was on the short list for the head coaching job here 10, 15 years ago. So it was comical to me. I think for the Notre Dame fan base, it was sort of a nice distraction from the hurt of last Saturday night.
I think part of what's fueling it is I don't think you would see this idea floated publicly 5 years ago, and it certainly wouldn't have picked up actual steam, people considering it 5 years ago. But, you know, with how college football has changed, frankly, the influx of even more big money, maybe it seems more realistic. I mean, the prior Notre Dame head coach did leave for a job that at best is a lateral move in LSU, but maybe you consider it an upgrade for Brian Kelly because it's in the SEC. I don't know. Sure. I think in the backdrop, Pete, and I'm not trying to defend it, I'm just trying to figure it out like anyone else. The backdrop would be, you know, Oregon's head coach left a couple years ago for Florida State, and then the next head coach left for his alma mater at the U. We've seen other guys leave Power 5 jobs, big Power 5 jobs, for lesser, at least seemingly lesser Power 5 jobs. I guess what I'm getting at, Pete, you're a beat writer for one of the premier brands in college football in the history of the sport. Aren't we in a brave new world where anything is possible, or is this still that far off and just too ridiculous?
I mean, I think we're in a ridiculous new world where you can beat Michigan one time and get a 10-year deal worth, $95 million? And I mean, that's like the crazy thing. Like, there are many crazy things about Michigan State right now, but like one of them is that like that Mel Tucker's contract reset the entire coaching industry, including Brian Kelly looking around to leave for LSU from Notre Dame. So I just think like, look, you can throw all this money around, but at some point you got to look at the program you're going to and think like, where is that in the food chain of college football? Notre Dame is not at the top, but it's close to the top. Michigan State, when the Big Ten expands, like, is that a top 10 job in the league? I know that they have a lot of money to spend, and the facilities are really good. There's, I think, very good fan support there, but the idea of going from Notre Dame to Michigan State does not add up. And if Michigan State reached out to Marcus Freeman, God bless them, but I think that would be a really, really short conversation.
So let's talk about that, because it seems like the primary motivation to someone who believes this could actually happen would be money. And as you said, that story that started all this listed his compensation from Notre Dame at about $2.5 million a year. But again, you know, that's not necessarily accurate. They're a private institution. What is it closer to in reality without us being able to definitively know?
That's, I don't know what the figure is. My hunch would be that it's sort of like six, being a first time head coach. Here's what I do know for a fact, that when Brian Kelly was looking at LSU and decided to go, and I think for a 10-year, $95 million deal, Notre Dame was actually willing, according to my sources, to go up to $9.5 million per year with Brian Kelly, but they weren't willing to do a 10-year guaranteed deal. So for the right coach, Notre Dame is willing to pay, I think, above value or right at market value. Marcus Freeman, I don't think, has proven to be a $9.5 million coach yet, but he is, if he wins here, Notre Dame will pay that. He'll be paid in that tier of college head coaches.
We're talking with Pete Sampson. He's the Notre Dame beat writer for The Athletic. Real interesting, parallels between the two of us, Pete. You grew up in Michigan, intimately familiar with MSU. I grew up in basically Metro South Bend, on just the other side of the border in Southwest Michigan, and surrounded by Golden Domers. So I feel like I have a pretty good finger on the pulse of the Notre Dame fan base. And I think another part of why this story got the legs that it did is it seemed to be predicated on the belief that Marcus Freeman is in trouble.
with the Notre Dame fan base. And, you know, I know we're past the 24-hour rule, but maybe we should give it a little bit longer. Of course, this is one of the most temperamental fan bases in all of college football, and deservedly so. It has one of maybe the richest history in all of the sport. So, of course, the fans are going to be disappointed the way that game ended, especially, you know, losing to Ohio State with 10 players on the field. Now, the last two, the biggest two plays of the game. But is his job really in jeopardy?
No. No, 100% no. There's no heat here at all on him. The fan base has really taken to Freeman in a way that I've been covering Notre Dame for 21 years, which means I was not here when Lou Holtz was here. There's been no head coach that I've covered that the fan base has sort of embraced more than Marcus Freeman, nor do I think there's ever been a coach here that's embraced Notre Dame quite the way that Freeman has. So there is a lot of support for him still, which is, look, they lost to Marshall and Stanford last year, which were horrible losses. The way the Ohio State game ended was dreadful. But I think for the most part, the Notre Dame fan base looks at the Ohio State game and says, hold up, we can look at that game and feel like we were the better team. They look at that game and say, all the mistakes that Notre Dame made, still one play away from beating Ohio State, which is like, I think we look at college football and think Georgia, Ohio State, and Alabama are sort of like in their own class. Notre Dame's been trying to break into that group for a long time. They've never come as close as they did on Saturday night. So I think that while there's a ton of frustration about how the game ended, I think once you take a step back from it, the Notre Dame fan base views Marcus Freeman with a ton of optimism about where this can all go. So I don't, there's no heat on him at all. If they lose at Duke this weekend or lose to Louisville, then maybe that would be a different conversation. But right now I think that there's absolutely zero heat on him from the fan base.
I think Freeman put it best himself when he said, I think this was just a couple of days ago, he said, if you had told me before the game that we would run the ball for almost 200 yards, have 35 minutes of possession, no turnovers, no penalties, I would think we would have won the game and probably comfortably. And I agree. It just, I don't know what happened there at the end with the two plays where they didn't have the right guy. And I don't know why you wouldn't just take the penalty, since it would be like a 6-inch penalty. Maybe that is worth some criticism there that the fans are probably levying at this time. But overall, like, it's clear that they were hanging blow for blow, just like they did a year ago with Ohio State and Columbus. So I agree with you. The returns are good so far. Let's go down the road you just mentioned, because Notre Dame does have a tough schedule, and they have to go to Duke, another guy Michigan State might be interested in. Mike Elko has turned that around real fast. That's a night game at Duke. Then the next week they have another night game on the road at Louisville, who hasn't lost yet. And then they, you know, get to come home, and they have the, you know, the luxury of playing USC at home. So it is a brutal schedule. And I think part of what gave this whole MSU potentially kicking the tires on Marcus Freeman's story even more legs is, if you look at this, you could see Notre Dame finishing with three or maybe four losses, and that would probably sour the fan base. Do you think they would pull the ripcord in year two on this guy if that did happen?
No. I think that, honestly, they would have to go like 6-6 for them to say, like, ooh, all right, this is not working out. And we have enough certainty of that to, like, make a change. I think they would pretty much have to lose the next three games for that to happen. And with Sam Hartman at quarterback, I mean, what they put on the field on Saturday night for 56 minutes, that seems highly, highly unlikely to me. If they finish 8-4, it would be really disappointing. And I think people would sort of give a side eye about, like, all right, is this going as well as it should? You know, where does Notre Dame need to improve? But recruiting has been good. Freeman still has a pretty high approval rating around here. It would have to go south so bad that I don't know if Michigan State would look at Marcus Freeman the way that, you know, maybe some fans are looking at him right now. So that, I just don't see where that would line up. And if you have quarterback figured out and a really good offensive line and a good defense, which Notre Dame has all those three things, you're a 9-win team at minimum. So I would be very surprised if things went sideways for Notre Dame. But, you know, look, Saturday night at Duke is tricky. They'll have a lot of pressure on them down there.
A few more minutes with Pete Sampson. He's the Notre Dame beat writer for The Athletic. Okay, so why don't we talk about you mentioned this, and I think we can be done with the whole silly MSU Marcus Freeman story. But you mentioned Brian Kelly and, you know, partially how Mel Tucker's deal in Michigan State's, you know quick trigger finger helped him get pretty much the same contract out of LSU. Could you clarify for us up here in Big Ten country, definitively, why Brian Kelly left Notre Dame? Because it seems to me, obviously, money is always a factor, but I'm not sure it was as dominant of a factor as maybe other things.
Yeah, well, I think it was a couple things. I mean, money was a big one, because if Notre Dame's willing to offer you 3 years at $9.5 million per year, and LSU says, well, how about we give you 10 years at $9.5 million a year, that's a big difference in money. Because it's not just the annual salary, it's the term of the contract. So that was a big part of it. And I think that Brian Kelly, you know, whether he was right or not to feel this way, felt like he had sort of taken Notre Dame as far as he could take it. He didn't feel like he was going to be able to win at a higher rate than he had here. And he got them really close. I mean, they made the playoff twice. They made the national championship game once. They had won 10 games, five straight years. Like, and I think he just was like, you know what? This is as good as it's going to get up here. I want a new challenge. I want to go to a place where I can get yes from the administration more often than I do at Notre Dame, which is true and fair, and I understand that. So money was a big part of it, but I think control and what he saw as like a chance to take it to the next level down there, I think was a significant part of it. And I think you saw that in how emotionally he was at the end of the Alabama game last year. Like, that's a game he had been trying to win at Notre Dame for 12 years and could never do it. And he did it down there in his first year. So I think he looks at that and be like, this is where things can go for me at LSU. Like, I've got a better chance to win it all at LSU than I did at Notre Dame. And they're going to pay me $95 million over 10 years. Like, it's a pretty attractive deal.
How much of the decision do you think was in part? I had heard some Notre Dame fans talking about, I'm not sure what they call it, but there's, I guess, part of the football facilities that Brian Kelly was unhappy with.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, they don't have a dedicated training table up here, like an in-house nutrition facility to serve and make meals for the football team, the way that I know LSU does. I'm pretty sure Michigan State does as well. Mm-hmm. That's part of the next expansion of their football facility, but there are no new blueprints of that. They haven't fundraised all the way for it yet. Like, that's still years away. At LSU, they already have it. So that's part of it. And I think that gets back to what I just said. Like, he can get yes from the administration in LSU much more quickly and regularly than he can at Notre Dame. And he's talked about that, and he's right. Like, at Notre Dame, they you may say, we need this new dining facility for football, and they may say, well, we're building a new architecture school and a new art museum, so your football will have to wait. Like, that doesn't happen at LSU.
Right.
So I think he was right to feel that way and feel like, okay, I can get yes more often down there.
Yeah, I see that as well. Okay, so by the way, you mentioned earlier, I'd like to hear what you mean by this, that Marcus Freeman, you said, more than maybe any other coach you've covered in your 20-plus years covering Notre Dame, has embraced Notre Dame more. And when I think about that, I don't know what you mean, except I thought it was interesting the guy converted to Catholicism a couple years ago. I have never heard of that before, and there have been a lot of non-Catholics, I think, who took over that program. I don't know if Lou Holtz is a Southern guy, isn't he? Like, I doubt he's Catholic. So that
West Virginia, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that's interesting.
Well, yeah, and I think just with Freeman, the conversion to Catholicism definitely registered with some people. I don't think he did it because he was the Notre Dame head coach necessarily, but you certainly have, like, you know, people who can get that done. I think, like, the way that he talks about choose hard, the way he talks about, you know, the academics here, leaning into, like, some of what makes Notre Dame different, even if it doesn't make it easier to win. I think that I just think the way that he on campus, and I think maybe you've seen this at Michigan State sometimes with like Tom Izzo going to football games and whatnot, but like you'll see Marcus Freeman at men's basketball games, women's basketball games, women's volleyball games, men's lacrosse games. Like he just feels like he's part of the campus in a way that Brian Kelly did not. Because I think a lot of times these big time football programs, the football program feels like it's an athletic department of one sport. And then every other sport feels like it's in a different athletic department. And Marcus Freeman's point view of Notre Dame is like, no, we're kind of all in this together. And I think that really has resonated with a lot of fans where it's like Marcus Freeman sort of feels like he's one of us for a lot of Notre Dame fans, even though he went to Ohio State. And I don't think Brian Kelly ever gave off that sort of warm vibe of I get Notre Dame and like I'm sort of in this with you. So I think that's sort of the big difference.
Brian Kelly has done that at LSU, though. He has a Southern accent sometimes.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, and you see him at women's basketball all the time down there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's he's reinvented himself in Baton Rouge. Fair play to him.
No kidding. Let's wrap up with a minute or two here on Notre Dame football on the field, if you don't mind, Pete, because I know Marcus Freeman has taken a ton of criticism and deservedly so as the head coach, even if it's not his fault, the buck stops with him. The two biggest plays of the game that wind up deciding the game and costing the game, they only have 10 players on the field both times. I get that. But I also feel like whoever lost that game, the head coach was going to be in deep bleep, right? It was just one of those games. Ohio State, like Ryan Day feels vindicated and then cuts a WWF promo on Lou Holtz. but like if they had lost the game, he'd probably be taking a ton of heat too. And their fan base would be a little antsy, at least in the Twitter sphere and all that. I just feel like it was a high stakes game. I don't know do you think there are huge takeaways from that for either team at this point? I guess Ohio State maybe more because whether Ryan Day wants to admit it or not, the physicality thing was an issue. And I think Notre Dame is kind of employing the U of M, the Michigan blueprint from the last couple of years of how they play. So I just wonder, like, how big of a loss was that for Notre Dame, you think?
I like the way that it ended makes it huge. The fact that they lost to Ohio State by 3 points, like in a vacuum, is not not that significant. Like I don't know too many Notre Dame fans that expected them to go 12-0. I always thought splitting Ohio State and USC and then being 8-1 when you go down to Clemson in November, that would be like a very successful pass for the season. That's all still in play.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just like for Notre Dame, I think fans, they look at it as like, all right, you had the Bush push game. You had the Nebraska game from 2000. You've had the Georgia home game, losing at Clemson on the road in 2015, the Florida State loss in 2014. Like, Notre Dame has not won enough of these games. And to win it against Ohio State, where there is a little bit of an animosity between the fan bases, and to be that close, it felt like a way to, like, link Notre Dame. Like, it would have been the biggest home win in 30 years. And to be that close to that and let it slip through your fingers due, in part, to an organizational error, it's really hard to swallow. It's really hard to swallow for the Notre Dame fan base. And I think if they had won, Notre Dame probably would have been the central story in college football until they had lost, with Colorado having lost over the weekend. So, like, you lose that opportunity as well. So there's just a lot to it if you're a Notre Dame fan. It was a lot for this fan base to process.
Yeah, and obviously the story that's going to dominate out of that is the missing defender for the last two plays. But, I mean, you can make case the offense didn't do a good job trying to close it out.
Yeah.
I know there's questions about coaching there, right, and decisions there. Like Audric Estime has an 11-yard run, and then he's just kind of done. We don't see him again. What's up with that? Because I see a lot of Notre Dame fans talking about that. He had that 11-yard carry to give him a first down when they're trying to go 5-minute offense and run the clock down. And then he's just kind of done. Is that a thing? It seems like from the fan base they think – there's no rhyme or reason to the substitution pattern there.
Yeah, I have less of an issue with Estime's usage, which is, like, peculiar, don't get me wrong. It was, in terms of the snaps the running backs got in the game, that was the lowest percentage Estime had all season. That's strange. But if you look at the end of the game, they botched a first down run where Sam Hartman turns the wrong way to hand the ball off to the wrong back. Like, that Estime doesn't have anything to do with that. Then they call a screen pass. You know, should they have put Estime back in and just plowed him into the line to run clock there? There's a really good argument for that. The screen pass they called, you know, it was close to being a home run play. If you look down the field, there's nobody there. Mm-hmm. But it was almost pick off, too. So it's, you know, I think that the offensive coordinator, Jared Parker, had an overall a decent game. But, like, the fourth down calls are in the first quarter and the third quarter, to me, were probably the worst parts of the game for Parker. Estime didn't get the ball on either of those. They tried to sneak Sam Hartman. I don't think that's the way to go there. So, yeah, it's like Estime should have played more. But I think it was the play calls, whether it was Estime or another back, to me, that was more of the issue than who the back was. Like, the backs needed to touch the ball more than they did.
And then you mentioned the animosity between the two fan bases, which I didn't realize was a thing. It seems like it really dialed up coming into this game. I mean, before this and before last year, they hadn't played in a decade almost. And I think it's only the eighth meeting all time. Do you think there's like it seems like there's a good foundation for a rivalry here if, oh, I don't know, Notre Dame ever wants to join the Big Ten?
Yeah, no, it's a marquee game. Like 10 million people watched. I mean, million people watched the game last year too. It's a weird rivalry because they haven't played a whole lot. And Ohio State's won six straight in the series, so Ohio State could sit there and say, like, well, Notre Dame's not much of a rival for us. But I think, you know, the recruiting crossover is big, the coaching staff crossover is big. Ohio State is sort of where Notre Dame wants to go in terms of success and recruiting. So yeah, it's just I think that Notre Dame would like to consider Ohio State a rival, maybe more than Ohio State considers Notre Dame one. But people turned out to watch this game, and I would love to see it played more. Maybe when the playoff expands, that can be a first round game or a second round game somewhere. But it was an intense night. I mean, both fan bases really got into it in both these games. It was kind of, you know, one of those nights where you're like, yeah, this is why I love college football.
Yeah, absolutely. And then last thing, Pete, let's wrap it up with this. You know, we just kind of obliquely or tangentially mentioned it, but with college football changing so much so fast, it was interesting to me to see Jack Swarbrick kind of cause the ACC to rethink its original dismissal of specifically Cal and Stanford and really bailing them out. Like, you can make the point, like, we've talked before, you and I, on different iterations of this program, how Michigan State owes a lot to its development as a big-time program and getting into the Big Ten to Notre Dame scheduling it and helping it get some platform.
Yeah.
Well, they just did that to save Cal and Stanford's maybe entire athletic departments as a D1 school. What did you make of that?
Yeah.
That is interesting. And does that indicate that Notre Dame is, even though not a full member of the ACC, kind of taking some sort of like ownership of being involved, and could that be the ultimate destination here, whether it's a matter of a couple years or even further on down the line, Notre Dame joining a conference full time, it being the ACC?
I don't think it has anything to do with Notre Dame's likelihood or not of joining the ACC over the Big Ten. I still think, like, if push came to shove, like, at the whatever era of college football we're in, the Big Ten and the SEC are going to rise above everybody else. And if I'm Notre Dame, I'm not hitching myself to one of the other wagons if I don't have to. Notre Dame's independence pretty much hinges on whether they can get a good deal from NBC. I think that they will. Then they can afford to be independent. I mean, Notre Dame wants to stay as independent as long as humanly possible. I have a hard time seeing them joining the ACC at full time if that's what they're pushed to do in 2036, when the college football playoff, this new deal comes to an end. So I think we're still a decade away from that conversation being, like, incredibly serious for Notre Dame. But Yeah, I just have a hard time seeing Notre Dame looking at the Big Ten, especially with Washington, Oregon, UCLA, and USC, and not thinking, like, that's where we got to be, right? Like, that's the national conference. That's how we get to the West Coast and the East Coast in the same year. That's how we get back to some of our older rivalries, which draw ratings and sell tickets. So, I mean, I think the Big Ten gets more attractive for Notre Dame every year. So 5-10 years from now, I don't think a whole lot will have changed there, and the Big Ten will be willing to take Notre Dame when Notre Dame is willing to come, if we get to that point.
He's Pete Sampson. He's the Notre Dame beat writer for The Athletic. Thanks for your time, man. We appreciate it as always.
Absolutely.
The Lions travel to Green Bay looking for their fifth win there in the last 9 seasons. Will Detroit keep up the trend of turning the Packers' home turf into Ford Field West? We're breaking it down on Nachos and Kneecaps, the Lansing area's local Detroit Lions tailgate show presented by Momentum Health Center in Mason.
Hey there, this is Brock Palmbush. Join me and Beanie this coming Thursday night for a special Nachos and Kneecap from Reno's North.
From 6 to 7 p.m. Come for great food and drinks, swag, prize giveaways, and gritty Lions talks. Nachos and Kneecaps brought to you by Momentum Health Center in Mason. On Classic Rock 94.9 MMQ and the game 7:30 a.m.
It's the Whitelaw PLLC Tailgate Show on the Lansing Sports Network, the Big Talker 1240 WJIM, and Classic Rock 94.9 MMQ, a tradition in Lansing for over 20 years. With your hosts, the Dean of Sports, Tim Stout, and offensive-minded host, Beanie Howell. Powered by Whitelaw PLLC,
Doubting Industries, Chupin and Sons Recycling Industrial Services, Gravity Smokehouse, and Chandler's Top Shelf.
This is the Whitelaw PLLC Tailgate Show.
You should be driving a Kia from Kia of Lansing and Kia of Jackson.
This message goes out to all the great people in the state of Michigan who are looking for a new car and just tired of getting the runaround. Well, at Kia of Lansing and Kia of Jackson, we're going to make it real easy for you. First off, everybody gets $3,000 minimum for their old trade-in. No ifs, ands, or buts. Second off, we have new cars to sell. They're available to test drive and available to buy. And third, we have great interest rates like a 2023 Kia Soul or Kia Forte 2.9% APR. Because I'm Skip Young, and you know I want to see ya in a Kia.
You should be driving a Kia from Kia of Lansing and Kia of Jackson.
Kia of Lansing on South Pennsylvania Avenue and Kia Jackson on Page Avenue across from Menards.
Trade offer requires new vehicle purchase. $2,209 per month per 1,000 borrowed for 48 months at 2.9 APR with approved credit. Expires month after.
TheKiaGiants.com.
With electric vehicle sales at a record high this year, allow the experts at Sparky's Electric to get your home charging station installed for you. Are you finding that you're spending too much at the public charging stations, wishing there was an option for a faster charge? Maybe you're looking to provide this option to your employees at your place of business, or you just want the convenience of plugging your car in at your own home at the end of the day. The good news is Sparky's Electric is here to help. Schedule your free estimate today. Visit SparkysElectricLLC.com. Thunderstorms, strong winds, down power lines. If a power outage is a concern of yours, call Sparky's Electric, where we can put you back in control in the event of an outage. Whether you're looking for a plug to run your portable generator or looking for an all-in-one system that can automatically turn your power back on, we have options. Schedule your free estimate today. Visit SparkysElectricLLC.com.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how's the back pain now?
22.
Wonky work from home desks have Dane's Acupuncture booked up.
You need to get in, but this week's all full.
But finding more practitioners has them on pins and needles.
Okay. You know, my lunch is in 20 minutes. How fast can you get here?
Indeed can help them hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Instant Match instantly connects you with quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your sponsored job description. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Continental.
From the world of John Wick comes a Peacock original three-part event that takes us back to 1970s New York. The Continental.
This institution wields power beyond your imagination.
Let's take this house and everything that comes with it.
The Continental, from the world of John Wick. Streaming now.
And away we go.
Only on Peacock.
The pandemic is over, but COVID-19 is here to stay. In fact, it's still among the top 5 leading causes of death in the U.S., just after heart disease and cancer. So this fall, stay up to date with the latest COVID-19 vaccines, just like you do with the flu, because you've got no time for 19. The vaccine may not be for everyone. Please consult with your doctor. Brought to you by Moderna.
Sports talk and the best play-by-play in Lansing. It's just what we do. We're Lansing's number one source for sports talk. The game, 7:30 a.m.
Come see us when we get started tonight at 6 o'clock. A chance to win a lot of Lions swag and stuff like that, okay? And we'll be here till 7:10. That's a few minutes away. But basically out of time today, and I wanted to wrap up talking about, the Mel Tucker situation. An interesting foil to that is the Pat Fitzgerald case. And there's reporting today in the Daily Herald out of Chicago. Dr. J, I don't know if you saw this, Pat Fitzgerald is getting ready to sue Northwestern for $100 million.
Which is ridiculous.
$40 million is what's left on his deal. And then $60 million he's claiming in lost wages, which would be his next contract. But he doesn't get that because he's claiming Northwestern fired him improperly. Wrongful termination. So if you want a preview of what the situation in Michigan State might look like, take a look at Pat Fitzgerald with Northwestern. That could be coming down the pike. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, that'll do it for us today. Hop in here and wrap it up. Coming up next, Nacho. Also, Classic Rock 94.9 MMQ from 6 o'clock till 7:10. Hope you'll come out and join us or tune in if you can't make it. Other than that, we'll see you in a few minutes or tomorrow, when Defensive Minded is back 4 to 6 here on the game, 7:30 a.m. For Dr. Day and everyone here on Defensive Minded in the game, 7:30 a.m. until 4 o'clock tomorrow, be safe and be good. Push it to the